Om Shanti. Let's give a warm welcome to Sister Dennis with one hand clap. Sister Dennis is one of the original jewels of the West, one of the few who took knowledge in the initial days when Daddy Janaki went to the Western world to start off with the service. And her beautiful classes, you know, it's a treat to the intellect. Such deep and, you know, and she's been working on recording many episodes on Raja Yoga, meditation and Gita and many other variety of topics. She also was an instrument for creating beautiful course for Valley Education, you know, like then or on the basis of her course, Valley Education in different universities in India started off. And we have a very beautiful topic today, unpacking Srimad, because Sister Denise understands Baba's language, Hindi, and her churning is so deep and she gives a new meaning to different points of knowledge. So now we will listen from Sister Denise. Option.
Om Shanti. Thank you, Sumanbin. This session is on the subject of unpacking Srimad. So I would like to look at some specific words that we are all very familiar with, which come in the Murli, and which are in Hindi. And so along with Srimat, generally speaking, you hear about Manmat and Paramat. So I will make a comparison between Srimat, Manmat and Paramat so that you can see that distinction. And Srimat is also to be found in connection with some other words. And one of them is Niyam, which you may or may not know, Niyam. And then the other one is Maryada. So you all know Maryada, but Niyam you may not know. Niyam is like laws and practices. And all these words have a certain meaning in a certain context. And because of this, there are many different options how you like to interpret them. And we come into Gyan at some point, and here we still are, and time carries on. And so when you come in Gyan initially, you will understand Gyan a certain way. And then after a while, you will understand it a different way. And then after another while, you will understand it another different way. And so it goes until finally you leave your body having understood it some other way. And that what that means is that there is a process of development in us individually and collectively. And we may not all develop at the same speed, but there is some kind of a track that we tend to go along, which is discernible. And so it allows us to have a look at, okay, where am I on this track? It's not always in terms of how many years have I been in Gyan, or whether I've been in Gyan in the context of living in a center or attending a center or participating in programs or being a quote-unquote cooperative soul. There's lots of different formats for all of us. And of course, each and every one of us experiences every day's Murli quite individually, and we describe it to others when we have to describe it to others, also quite individually. And so this is an interesting phenomenon. So the word Srimat comes in the title of the scripture, which is called the Gita, so it's called Srimat Bhagavad Gita. And that means, you can say the directions of God in the form of a song. So that's one way to translate it. But Srimat is also comparable to GPS. And so it tells you, go this way, and if you do, then it gives you the next way, and if you don't, it'll make you go around until you get on track, and then it'll get you to arrive at the destination. And many, many people interpret the word Srimat pretty much the same as you would follow the GPS, which is the general purpose satellite, when you want to go from A to B and arrive at some destination. In the old days we used to use maps, and now we use these different programs for arriving at where we want to go. And I think when we first come in Gyan, it is said to us, well, where you want to go is two places. One of them is Mukti, which is liberation, and the other one is Mukti, Jivan Mukti, which is liberation in life. So you have some directions for going to Mukti and then other directions for going to Jivan Mukti. Then you have another couple of words which is similar to Mukti and Jivan Mukti, which you find in the Murali. One of them is Gati and one of them is Sadgati. So Gati means the destination and Sadgati means the right destination. And generally speaking, you will find the word Sadgati translated as salvation. But salvation may or may not be what we do here, because to me salvation is a concept to be found in Christianity, but not necessarily in BK. But since many of the BKs have a background in Christianity, you might be more familiar with the idea of salvation as opposed to ending up at the right destination. But anyway, there are two sets of people who give directions. And so in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, all of these words are said to come from God. And so God speaks. It is said, first word of the Gita, Shri Bhagwan Uvach. It actually doesn't say Shri Krishna Bhagwan Uvach, although many people think it does say that, but it actually doesn't. It says Shri Bhagwan Uvach. And the word Krishna can be somebody's name, as in the first prince of the Golden Age, who, as we all have heard many times, he does not speak the knowledge of the Gita, but he is the result of the Gita. But the word Krishna also means the most attractive one. And there are many, many words in the Gita which describe the speaker of the Gita, and the word Krishna comes quite a bit. But there are other words as well, which correspond a little more closely to Shankar. For example, there's one which means the one with the grizzled hair. And Sri Krishna has very nice coif, you know. He doesn't have grizzled hair. So when you unpack it, you find that, of course, many people have decided that they want to have pictures of who is the speaker of the Gita, and everybody likes Krishna, so his picture got in. But if you look at it as it really is, you may or may not want to put his picture. Because there are also many, many statements in the Gita which describe the incorporeal and which corresponds exactly to how we in Brahma Kumaris know Shiv Baba to be, the incorporeal Supreme Soul, who speaks through the chariot of Arjuna. And we always hear that Arjuna means Brahma Baba, and the chariot is the body, and the five senses and all of this. So, in the conventional Gita, you will see, if you look at it very carefully, and look at the words, whatever are in there, in the Sanskrit, and look at the different alternative ways that they could be translated, you will find, or at least I have found, that it corresponds extremely closely to Gyan in some chapters, but there are other chapters where it doesn't correspond at all. And what you can understand from that is that the entire Gita is written by a number of different people who all had different ideas about what is what. And when you have Gyan, you're in a wonderful position to make a comparison between what Baba says and what is written, not just only in the Gita, but in many other religious scriptures. And this puts us at an extraordinary advantage. So we find that there is a possibility of studying this material very, very deeply, which is very inspiring. And it's so deep and so subtle that actually you really can never get bored. And this is why we carry on studying year after year, decade after decade. So I decided that it would be interesting for me to try to write about the Gita. So I started doing that, and then I found that it's so vast I need to restrict myself to a particular area because it's too big and it would take too long and that's not practical. So I thought, okay, the second chapter of the Gita is the one that corresponds very, very well to Gyan. And so I am limiting myself to that. And the second chapter of the Gita is where Krishna, incorporeal God, is in the chariot talking to Arjuna, who has actually got out of the chariot, thrown down his weapons, and said, I will not fight because it's not moral. And now, if you go to the word paramat, in comparison with srimat, the word paramat, then you also have another word which is manmat. And generally speaking, the translation that we are familiar with is paramat is other people's directions, and manmat is the dictates of your own mind. And there are also other ways that you can interpret these two words, which I actually prefer. So paramat corresponds to the ideas of people. And manmat corresponds to an individual's internalization of what they have learned since childhood, and then they become purveyors of paramat, so that this paramat and manmat is essentially exactly the same thing, there's no difference. But the interesting difference is that srimat comes from the incorporeal Supreme Soul, who is not remotely moralistic. And then paramat and manmat come from people who are moralistic. Because what happens in a person who grows up, gets married, has a family, has children, is they then feel obliged to educate their children according to the culture and belief system that they themselves grew up in, and then that culture is perpetuated. So all that is Paramat and Manmat, and it goes on and on for thousands of years. And then Shiva Baba comes along and says, well, I don't think so. You don't have it right at all. Let me give you a few ideas. And so what Shiva Baba says to us is not really directions. The directions are interpretations of Srimad, but Srimad itself is concepts. And so the first concept that Shiva Baba, God, Krishna, whoever you want him to be, but the speaker of the Gita, what he says to Arjuna is, look, you know, you're a soul. And so there are implications of that. And one of the implications is that if you are a soul, then you can't die. And if you can't die, then nobody can kill you. Then there was an extrapolation, which to me is a bit of Paramat coming into it, which creates a lot of problems in working with the Gita, but I find it quite interesting because it raises the question of karma philosophy, and the Gita is mostly about karma philosophy. Are you following me okay? Is this all right? Yes, no? No? Yes? Okay, good. Sometimes I get a bit too complicated. Anyway, what it says in the Gita is that since you cannot be killed, it means you cannot kill. But actually, that is not the case, because if you do the act of removing a person from their bodies through the use of violence, then this creates a trauma on the soul of the one who cannot be killed. But he definitely experienced the attempt to kill him, right? So there's a trauma. And there's also a karmic account, you see. If somebody kills you, then, you know, the karmic account says, well, probably you have to kill them back on another more suitable occasion. but in the Gita, it doesn't take that up, you see. Whereas for us, Brahma Kumaris, Kumaris, we look at everything very closely, and our main thing is that we want to perform pure karma. And along with Srimat, Manmat, Paramat, there's also three kinds of karma, which is also mentioned in the Gita. Pure karma, impure karma, and neutral karma. So those who work with the Gita interpret the word akarma, which we call neutral karma. They don't call it that. They don't have an idea of neutral karma. They say it is non-action. And the concepts of the sannyasis who want to avoid doing karma, which puts them into karmic bondage with anyone, stems from this statement in the Gita and their interpretation of it, that akarma is non-action. But Baba has said no. It is not non-action. You cannot do an action which is not an action. That doesn't make any sense. What Baba has told us is, every time you have a thought, say a word or write a word, or you do an act, it could be either pure, impure, or neutral. But neutral karma exists only when somebody is karmatit. And so Baba has described to us that karmatit is how you are when you're in the golden age. There is no maya in the golden age. So there is no body consciousness, there's no desire, there's none of those things which are to be found in the Iron Age. And so you can see that over time there's been these enormous divergences between what is said in the Gita and how it is interpreted. And the thing about Baba, which is very, very wonderful, is that he goes into the details and he says, this word has been interpreted this way because of this reason, but actually it doesn't mean that, it means this. So when he is teaching us, he needs us to understand, I think, the difference between what he is saying and then how the conventional people who are used to the knowledge of the Gita, what they are saying. And one thing that is very, very difficult is for a person who has grown up as a moral person, a moral and ethical person, to consider that they may have it wrong, because they've been trained to consider that they've got it right. Now, Paramat and Manmat can only exist if a person is gender conscious. You know, that means you think I am a male or you think I am a female. And the Paramat is absolutely based on this idea that people fall into two categories, males and females. And then beyond that, there are further categories. In the Gita, it categorizes people according to caste. And in BKs, you hear very, very little about caste. You don't know about caste. But caste is a very powerful energy in India. And one of the pieces of the Gita, part of Srimad, is that you must act according to your caste. And this is the reason why we experience in the Muralis very frequently that Baba will say, you are, you know, Shivanshi Brahman Kul Bhushan. Have you heard that one before? Might have. Anyway, Shivanshi, you are the descendants of Shiva because you're souls and he's the Supreme Soul. So you belong to him. And as a child of Shiva, you do not have a gender. And then Brahma Kumar Kumaris, took birth through the mouth of Brahma. Mukvam Shavali, there is this word, Mukvam Shavali. You're born through the mouth of Brahma. And a Brahmin is somebody who has to have two births in one body. That's one of the requirements. And of course, most people find it difficult to have two births in one body because the explanation is not given. But Baba gives us the explanation that anyway, all souls are children of Shiv Baba, whether they like it or not, whether they know it or not, whatever religion they're in doesn't matter. But when you are listening to the knowledge of Shiv Baba through the body of Brahma Baba, and when he says, you are my child, through this Brahma Baba who is your Alaukik Father, and you say yes, and you understand what's known as the secrets of the three fathers, right? In the Murli, sometimes Baba says you have three fathers, your Laukik, your Alaukik, and your Paralaukik. So to be a Brahmin, you have to have recognized Shri Baba through the body of Brahma Baba. And what Shri Baba speaks through the body of Brahma Baba is known as Srimat. So you have to distinguish very carefully between concepts and rules and regulations, because the rules and regulations are not the same as the concepts. They have a different purpose and a different origin. So now, if you want to be a good Brahmin, then you have to practice many different forms of purity. So on a physical level, purity means having a bath and eating vegetarian and, getting up and having Amrit Vela and all these type of things. And so that's physical. And then there are more and more subtle characteristics of a Brahmin, characteristics of purity. And so we have this word in Gyan, which sometimes you hear in the Murli, Brahmachari. So Brahmachari, generally speaking, is called celibacy. So purity, celibacy, Baba wants us to practice celibacy. This is a big thing. And it is a difference between someone who is a full-on BK and someone who isn't. So the celibacy is very important because when you practice celibacy, it's an extremely powerful instrument for breaking karmic bondage. And when you don't practice celibacy, it's a powerful instrument for creating karmic bondage. So we practice celibacy because we have in mind to finish karmic bondage. So you have karmic accounts, you have karmic bondage, and then you have another thing which is called karma samband. So you have karma bandhan, karmic bondage, you have karma samband. So karma samband is where you are in relationship of interaction with someone, but the quality of your karma is such that you remain independent of bondage. And so the alaukik relationships between BKs needs to be, as much as possible, karma samband. But when we come into Gyan, we arrive with a whole bunch of karmic bondages. And generally speaking, whichever of the people in your Laukik family that you're born into, they are the people that you have karmic accounts with. So there's a bondage there. And they also have their mat, which is their culture and the way they want you to function as a moral, upright person. And they train you in that way. And everything is fine until you meet Shri Baba, who says, I think we'll do it differently. And then you say, oops, how do I handle this one? And we work it out. So we also, because Baba has told us, one part of Srimat is not only are you a soul, but you reincarnate. And you reincarnate 84 times maximum in a cycle. And the people who are expected to become Brahmins in the confluence age also are expected to have had around about 84 births. And so when we hear about the cycle, we have 84 births, you know, with 8 in the Golden Age and 12 in the Silver Age and 21 in the Copper Age and 42 in the Iron Age. And we also know that you have had 42 female births and 42 male births. So you cannot really say whether you are a male or a female. And because of that, you have ammunition for taking down the concept of being either a male or a female. And it's quite difficult to look at yourself in the mirror and say, whatever I see in the mirror, that's not what I am. Even though you say it many times. But for it to go from being a nice idea to a real reality is a very, very deep thing, because to undo gender consciousness takes a complete lifetime. And so in Gyan, we are given a number of mantras, and these mantras are really Srimad, I would say. So the first mantra is, of course, Om Shanti. And Om Shanti means, I am a peaceful soul. And a peaceful soul doesn't mean I'm a peaceful soul. It has other meanings also. Shanti means peaceful, no doubt. And what you think peaceful is will vary from person to person. Shanti also means silent. So that means the soul, when it's not in action, is not thinking, not speaking, and not doing anything. It's just still. So Shanti also means still. So you're still, you're silent, you're peaceful. That is Shanti. And the practice of Raj Yoga involves thinking the thought to disconnect the self from the consciousness of the body and from activity through the body, which creates the consciousness of the body. So the first Srimat is really the suggestion. Mat means actually advice. So we are advised to think of ourselves as still and to try to hold that still state and then come into action through the body. And the actions through the body are good karma if your consciousness is that not only am I a peaceful soul, but I'm also a pure soul, a powerful soul, a loving soul, and a blissful soul. So to hold oneself independent of the body in the experience of being pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, and blissful is a very subtle kind of practice, but that's the first mantra. And so we try that over many, many decades and we get it a little bit. But it's deep. You can understand how deep it is because, you know, in our meditation we have lots of lights and music and all kinds of stuff which pulls us into the body. But then if you don't have it, then on the inside of your mind you have all kinds of other things that pull you into the body. So it was thought that you can associate your bodiless stage with red light, with little points. And a point is a very good image because a point does not have any length or breadth or depth. So it's non-physical, and it's a very, very good thing to focus on when you want to develop the thought that I am non-physical and try to separate from the body and hold yourself in that consciousness, then come into action. Now, the other thing that Baba has said is, you're all souls, no doubt, but you're all depleted, spiritually depleted, because you've had 84 births, and just for the soul to come into action through the body, whether it's good or bad or whatever, any kind of karma will use up the energy of the soul, and especially body conscious karma will use it up very, very quickly. So the second mantra is Manmanabhav. So Manmanabhav means that tune your mind to Shri Baba's mind. And so we need to know, who is this? Who is Shri Baba? So Baba describes himself in detail. He is the Supreme Soul. We are souls. What's the difference between the Supreme Soul and the soul? And how he is the ocean of all the characteristics that we need in order to be souls who are full and fully empowered. So being Bap Saman, you know, we have to be Bap Saman. That means however much purity, peace, power, love and bliss and knowledge Baba has, that much we also want to have. And if we can do that, then we are Bap Saman, which is like God. And the next mantra that Baba gives us, third mantra, is that, I don't know, there's several, I don't know exactly in which order we might like to have them, but one is Madhyaji Bhav. Madhyaji Bhav means remember the one in the middle, which means Vishnu. So remembering Vishnu means you're remembering the inheritance. You are remembering that you are an androgynous person, so you have to make sure that you become androgynous. That means both male and female, or neither male nor female, but whatever it is perfectly balanced. After all, you've had 42 male births and 42 female births, so you need to have it balanced, and then you can do one or the other according to time. But Vishnu means that you've got the four ornaments, and so the Swadarshan Chakra. Swadarshan Chakra means that all the events of the drama, all the way from absolutely Satopradhan to absolutely Tamopradhan, you have done them. You have experienced them. And when you spin this knowledge, Swadarshan Chakra, it means that your relationship with good and evil is absolutely neutral. Contrary to the regular human beings who will tell you it's a good idea to be good and a bad idea to be bad. And then Baba has said your greatest problem is you're caught up in right and wrong. Because then you can't actually get on with following Srimad. Because following Srimad means you are equal in the face of good and bad. And in the second chapter of the Gita, it talks about keeping this state of equilibrium. Excuse me. So there's Vishnu. And then he's got conch shell. And the conch shell refers to words. So that means that you have to speak the truth. And if you speak the truth and it upsets somebody, then it's not the truth anymore. So you have to find out how to speak the truth in such a way that it penetrates someone's mind, turns them into a different direction, and they're comfortable with it. And that's tricky, very tricky. Truth also means that you must not say anything or think anything or do anything that's against your conscience. And most people do it regularly, even as BKs, because It's very difficult to follow the voice of conscience, as expensive as anything. Because you might lose face, because you might not look good, because many things are there. So it's a very subtle kind of effort. Then you have the lotus flower, you know. This is Srimad, live your life as a lotus. So living life as a lotus means that you are, you know, in the world, but not of the world. So there you are with all your people at work and at home and this and that. And your karma has to be so precise that you're doing pure karma, you're not upsetting anyone, they respect you for what you are and who you are, and you're creating this detached state. And I like a certain expression which I'm working with at the moment, which is we have to have infinite patience, absolute love, and complete detachment. And so then I think if we do that, you know, moment by moment, we have a good chance of following the Srimad that says, you know, live your life like a lotus. And then the fourth ornament that Vishnu has is the mace, you see. And many BKs think that, you know, we can't use that because it's violence. But it's one of the weapons, it's one of the ornaments. It means one needs to know what it is and how to use it. So you have to think about it, what it is. And it's basically the power to destroy something which is not good for you. And one way that you can interpret it is that there are a lot of people who try and bring you under their influence. Have you experienced that? They try and influence you to believe this way or do that way or think this way. And this is what the mace is for, is to destroy your susceptibility to coming under somebody else's influence, because then instead of Srimat you'll go back into Paramat. Then you'll go into negative karma, then you'll go into karmic bondage, and then you have to start all over again to get free from karmic bondage. So your mace is a really important piece of equipment. Then there's another mantra which is very nice. It's Mamekam Sharanam Vraj, which means that just let me be the only one and take refuge in me alone. And what happens in life is there are many people who will present themselves as your protectors, and you have to be with us and not with them, you know. And what Baba is saying is be with me, and because I am really reliable. And these other people, if you put your vote with them, they may fail you, they may betray you, they may not be what they present themselves as, and then you're in not so good of a situation. And so Baba talks to us about cultivating all relationships with one alone. And that's pretty tricky because many people are raised in dysfunctional families. Some people, they, you know, they don't identify themselves in terms of relationships. In Asia, everybody identifies themselves in terms of relationships, so that fits quite well. But in the Western world, people tend to be more individual, and so the idea of cultivating all relationships with one, you have to think about it a lot more deeply because it doesn't come naturally. So that you have to think about. So all these things are Srimat, you see. And then you see you've got Maryadas. And Maryadas are boundaries. And when we first come in Gyan, we are given all sorts of details about you have to do this and you can't do that and eat like this and don't eat like that and this is how you have to have a bath and this is how you have to dress and this is the hairstyle you should have and blah, blah, blah. It's all very superficial. But it's necessary in the early days, just like when a child is being raised by their parents, they're raised according to how that culture is. And Baba has talked to us about Brahmin culture, and we're still trying to figure out what he means by that. And it's very subtle. But Mariyadas, I think that as time goes by, it's really about how you decide where to draw the line. And this then becomes individual. What lines will you not cross? So as you continue to study Gyan for many years, you begin to see clearly how you fit in the whole picture and where you want to go. And then you determine what the lines are. I won't go here, I will go there. This is me, this is not me, things like that. So this is really Mariyadas, it's boundaries. And boundaries are all about setting limits. Who you let close to you, who you keep distant, your relationship with all the different Brahman principles. How are you going to do it? How are you going to dress? How are you going to eat? How are you going to sort out your money matters? And all these various different things. And as you progress in Gyan, you create your personal ethical policy on the basis of all this knowledge. Niyam are sort of disciplines. And I think if we wish to achieve what's possible to achieve in any subject, but particularly in Gyan, it's very important to have disciplines. And it's very difficult to get it absolutely right. And people have a tendency to overdo. And so there is this word which I like very much, which is the optimum. You could do the minimum, okay. You could do the maximum, okay. But if you do the optimum, you can keep going indefinitely. If you do the maximum, you'll burn out. If you do the minimum, you'll fizzle out. Because you just won't develop enough strength to keep going. So it's very important to take a look at all the different things that Baba is telling us and the various different BK teachers, what are they telling us, and say, okay, how am I going to do this? Because you have to take into consideration your age, your financial situation, your personal strength, your level of intelligence, your how committed you want to be. There's many, many things that you have to decide for yourself. And as time goes by, you may change your sense of how you're going to do this. And I find that actually we do change our sense of how we're going to do this, because with time, we're accumulating power. And if we do all the things that are recommended to us, and we have all these different disciplines, then we find that we can do what other people can't do. Because following a discipline creates tremendous personal strength, but you have to have patience because it takes a long time to grow that power. So, you know, one of the things that I tend to favor is for us to look at powers and virtues and not bother about values. Because values to me correspond a bit more to Paramat and Manmat. And you can have a clash of values, but I've never seen a clash of virtues. So if we cultivate virtues, which of course come from God, values come from people, they're all Paramat. And then powers, we must developed the eight powers and a few other powers that Baba has given us over and above the eight powers. And the road of Gyan is not like a motorway or a freeway. It's very up and down. And in order for us to be in there for the long haul, it's a good idea to decide, you know, what's the most important thing and do that. Because it's not realistic to try and do everything all the time. You won't make it. But you have to decide, I'll do this, this is important, I'll do this, this is important. Da, da, da. And then again and again ask yourself, why am I here? Because it's easy for us to get distracted. You know, we want to be famous. You know, we want to be looking good. We want to be on stage. We don't want to be in the audience. If we could be on stage, it's somehow better, somehow, whatever. But you know, you have to decide to what extent you want to be a target, because if you want those things, you're a target. And to what extent you want to get on with life, you know, undisturbed, because that's also a good option. Ask yourself this question very, very deeply. What do you want? What are your priorities? What's the most important thing out of all the things that Baba has said? And then list it for yourself in order of importance. And then if you do that, I think you will find that you can keep going for a long time. Because there are many things that are not important, and unless you know they're not important, you may feel bad. And all of this is the aspect of ego, you know. So part of our practice is the destruction of ego, which is also called false ego. So then we have to see what we mean by false ego, what does Baba mean by false ego, what's it all about, so that we can see it. And the ego is such a thing that you can see other people's ego fairly well, but it's pretty difficult to see your own ego. And if somebody is so bold as to tell you what it is, you would probably not like it that much. And then that's the end of your relationship with that person. So people are quite careful about not telling each other what their ego problem is. But definitely, wherever there is a karmic account, you also get often the ego clash. And this is all to do with the false sense of security or the false sense of identity. And so the Srimat is also telling us all the time, you know, try to discriminate. The things that you consider important, are they really important? Or are they just pretending to be important? Because one of the powers is the power of discernment or discrimination, which means that we should not be deceived. And it's very, very easy to get deceived. So you can see that we go along on this road, starting off relatively gross, and as time goes by, it becomes more and more subtle. And it's not at all bad to, you know, throw the whole thing in the dustbin and start again with what you think this is. And you find that a lot of it, yes, but then some of it, no. You know, your standards change, your sense of right and wrong changes, your sense of what's important changes, your priorities change. And this is how we slowly become more and more mature, because this practice is a lifetime. And at the end of our life, we will die. And that means that we will, you know, leave this body. Sometimes I compare it to the very old kind of television sets which you used to get in the 1950s. When you turn off the TV in those days, it would create a little white dot, and then it would disappear. So I thought, yeah, that's good. We go and become a little white dot and then we disappear. Because you cannot experience the soul world because you don't have a body. You can't have any experience without a body. So in advance of going there, we process the ideas and then we take it into ourselves progressively deeply. We think about it, we ponder on it, we cogitate on it. All of this is meditation. And slowly it moves from being a nice idea, an intellectual concept, and slowly it becomes what you are. And then the inside and the outside, the mind and the intellect, it all becomes one thing. And I think this is really what we're looking for. So this is how I think of Srimad. So thank you. Om Shanti. So we'll have half an hour meditation. And I'll do a commentary for a few minutes, and then the rest of the time we'll just be in silence, because it'd be nice if you take up one or two points from this last hour and go into it, what it feels like, what it means to you as you practice. Om Shanti. Mic dinner, Inko?
Okay, I'm Shanti. Just before we do go into silence, just want to say thanks to Sister Denise for your time and sharing all those deep thoughts about that topic. So now we can enjoy even more that silence.
Om Shanti. Let us consider what is Srimad. Srimad says, be true to what you are. Thank you. I am not matter. Not my body, not my role. These are possessions. The essence of love and power. As is my Supreme Mother Father, so am I. Deep, wise, and loving. Beyond the world of matter. I am still. And quiet. I go beyond the day to day. Holding myself in the eternal. The essential. I am close to the source. I connect the light and the power begins to flow. It flows deep within me and travels beyond me. To everywhere. I simply stay focused and the energy goes where it's